Hey, welcome to Coin Talk. I'm Aaron Lammer, to be joined shortly by my co-host, Jay Kang. If you know Jay Kang, you know he likes some silly gambling, and we've got a whole show about practically how you can get into some silly gambling with your existing Ethereum and perhaps REP tokens. Yes, that's right. This show is about Augur, launched a week or two ago. Our general philosophy on the show is that in crypto, you should try it for yourself. So we downloaded Augur, synced a node, and made some bets. We also brought in our old friend Ledger Status to help coach us through this process. We're brought to you, as always, by Medium. Medium has a ton of great writing about crypto. You can find it all at me.dm/crypto. Also this week, bringing you the show, it's the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast. I'm going to tell you more about that mid-episode. You can get in touch with us, hi@cointalk.show. Here's the show.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Thursday, July 19th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $7,420.
Jay,
yo,
welcome.
How's it going?
Always nice to sit with you both in front of the monitor here.
I know, this is the closest we've done a recording in a long time.
This is a rare Coin Talk tutorial session.
how's the Crypto Cave doing after the recent flooding events?
Look, the Crypto Cave is it's on a flood plain. You know where they're like, you're uninsurable, like you're gonna flood again. You need to move off of this bayou.
Yeah.
I'd say that's basically the status of the Crypto Cave.
So it's like real estate in coastal Long Island right now.
I Googled the best mop for floods right after that because I decided I needed like a flooding mop.
What's the answer?
They don't make a flood specific mop.
The only way that I could see that a mop would be made for floods if it was really big. Like you should have
that's
Googled.
That's basically what I was asking.
You're like, Googling, like, what is the biggest possible
comically
mop?
Large mop.
You need to go to like a prop store or something like that.
So last time, last episode, you and I talked a little bit about Augur.
Yeah, in an episode which was full of misinformation, we should say.
Yeah.
But I think that we have a good justification for the misinformation.
Personal incompetence.
Well, more that like you and I approach this show in a we are the average consumer.
You know,
we are the average crypto consumer, and we will do an average amount of research into these things.
Yes.
And sometimes we do more than average.
Sometimes we're a B minus, sometimes we're a C minus.
Yeah, we're never a solid B.
We've never received an A.
We've
during
dipped
this entire
into the
run of the
F
show.
Plus.
We've had a couple Fs. Look, this stuff's confusing.
Yeah, and I think that my justification for it would be like, look, if Augur wants to launch and if it really wants to be what it's worth, you know, and it wants to put out a product which is rare in crypto, that product should be easy to understand, you know? And I don't think that we were approaching this as full noobs. I mean, we understand ERC-20 tokens, we understand Ethereum smart contracts, and we understand...
You're very experienced at gambling.
Yeah, we understand gambling and prediction markets. And so if we couldn't figure it out after like a few hours of reading about it, then I would just say that that's Augur's fault, not our fault.
I'm gonna take the other side here, which is Augur's brand new, just launched, and I take this product the same way I take crypto as a whole, which is you can think about it, talk about it, read about it. You don't really have a full impression until you try it, until you actually buy coins, hold coins, and in this case of Augur, actually download Augur, get it going, have the experience. It's almost like there's a like way it's described, and then there's a way that it actually is. And I found that way it actually was much more interesting than how it'd been described to me.
Okay, but like, what if Blizzard put out a game, right?
Yeah.
And there were no instructions to the game, and you couldn't figure out really how to download it, and then there was a ton of misinformation about the game, and there was no attempt from Blizzard to like differentiate between real and fake information.
But this is almost like what like games were like in the like Pong era or whatever. Or like when I, or like when I was trying to like...
I'm pretty sure that we can figure out Pong.
I mean, we're in the infancy. It's like, remember how hard it was to like run like Leisure Suit Larry on DOS?
No,
that I mean, J, you know what like I'm talking about.
C colon slash run.
Yeah, run.
Run dot exe. Run dot exe.
Yeah,
that's okay. Not that hard.
That's not hard. Okay, well, it's so we decide. I decided that I would give Augur a run. And for people who are interested in doing this at home, we chose this project because it appealed to us and we wanted to give it a try. I went into this. I didn't read the instructions. There didn't seem to be instructions. So the first thing you do is you just download Augur. It's an app for Mac, Windows, Linux. Quick download.
Okay, and just for those who are listening who don't know about it, the two-second explanation of Augur is that it was one of the hottest Ethereum apps or Ethereum ideas and companies and coins that came out early on. The people who made it became pretty wealthy. I think they're part of the crypto community in Puerto Rico now, right? They're written about by Nelly Bowles.
I'm pretty sure. No, I think Joey Krug lives in San Francisco.
Okay, but no, they're not. But they're in like one of the rich crypto houses.
That's the and I believe that Joey Krug, who's behind the project, is also part of a fund and has been involved in other projects.
No shaming of them for that, but just to show that for the, you know, this is not a small project. This is a very
hyped up project, and I think it's also a project that for the layman. For the noob out there who's not into crypto, it's easy to explain why this might be an interesting idea.
Yeah.
You can ask any question and create a market for it, and anyone can come gamble on that market.
Yeah, so we could ask, like, will CoinTalk be around in 2019?
Right. Yeah. Will Donald Trump be elected to a second term? That's currently. Okay.
Like,
so that's the kind of stuff I thought people would be asking on here. So you download it.
Yeah.
And then you have to choose a network. Now, I'm going to tell people here, you can choose a bunch of networks, including a couple of test nets. Wait, here.
Did you have to pick a network?
Yeah, you have to pick a network.
Is that like a blockchain? What are you picking here?
So I'm going to get there. So I recommend that you pick the main net. I tried it on a couple of the test nets, and I wasn't actually able to get the live data. I was only able to get the questions. So if you go to main net, you connect through a service called Infura.io. You'll see the HTTP endpoint is mainnet.infura.io. So when Augur was first coming out, people were like, you are going to have to run your own Ethereum node in order to run Augur. This is not totally accurate. You can use this service called Infura, which it is a centralized node, but they kindly give you access to it. However, once you choose the mainnet, you have to click update connection and it will sync the Ethereum chain to your local installation. So currently our good friend Ledger Status, who will be on the program later, is sitting there waiting till his node syncs. Jay, I've done you the great courtesy of syncing this node before you arrived in the crypto
game. It's like a cooking show where
okay, so this story started like a few hours ago when I synced the node. I think it took me half an hour to an hour or so. I don't have great Wi-Fi here. It's a clunky, slow, antiquated way to do things, but it's a window into how things are going to work on the blockchain, which is in order to interact with the Ethereum blockchain, you're going to have to sync it.
You have to download software
directly
and then sync it. Yeah.
Or through Infura, and I understand that lots of people who are decentralization purists would say that it's not that great to use a service like Infura, but okay, we'll come back to that.
Okay, so for those of, because, I mean, this is not on video.
Yeah.
But we have been staring at the number 99.9% for about a minute.
I'll say that it crawled up into the high 90s, and after it got there, it gave me the option to open the Augur app. So I guess you don't have to be at a full 100%, but once it gets up to about 99.9, look at the button that says open Augur app. That becomes lit once it's ready to go. So I'm going to click that. And what it does is it opens Augur in your web browser.
Ooh.
So we're now connected to the Ethereum blockchain, but we are in the web browser. And I've got two options here. I've got markets and I've got account. So without actually like making any kind of account or putting any money in or anything, you can go and look at all these markets. If you want to make markets or place wagers, you need to click account. And then once you're in the account tab, you basically need to sync it up to some kind of a wallet. I'm using MetaMask, which is a way that you can access the Ethereum network in
the
browser.
Yeah, it's the same service that was used for CryptoKitties.
Yeah, and Shapeshift is kind of similar if you've used it before. So they support MetaMask, Ledger, Trezor, and Edge. I just happen to already have MetaMask going here. So I'm going to connect MetaMask.
Okay, so we're five clicks in so far.
I think we're doing pretty well.
We're doing pretty well.
Keeping our clicks
down.
And
I got to say, as a person who doesn't care as much about logos and UX as you do,
yeah,
it looks kind of nice.
It's pretty slick.
It's like a very pretty purple.
If you tell me this was a successful new application startup out of San Francisco, I would not doubt you.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I'm logging into my MetaMask account. Now, I've gone to the Liberty, Jay, of popping a couple F into my MetaMask account so that we would be fully funded when we got here. So let's go check out the markets.
So we're ready. So at this point, we are ready to make our first yes/no bet in the prediction market.
So if you click over to markets, I believe they're sorted by popularity. So the most popular market's at the top. And this has been the most popular market since launch. And I now see that it's moved a bunch today.
Yeah. So the way that a prediction market works, for those who don't know, is that the question is, will the price of Ethereum be over $500 by the end of 2018? And you bet on it, and there's a price that comes out. Yes, right now is what, 70 cents?
Well, it's weird. It's putting it as 70 because that's the median between the best bid and the best ask.
Yeah.
So the bid is 63 and the ask is 84.
Okay, so, but let's call it 70. So
okay, call it 70.
The way this works is that if you believe that Ethereum is going to be higher than 500 by the end of 2018,
yep,
then you say yes. And if you get that price at 70 cents, you have one share at 70 cents, say. And if it is over $500 at the end of 2018, that 70 cents becomes a dollar. So you get 30%. So you're basically like 1 to 2.6 or whatever odds.
For people whose primary reference here is sports gambling, basically, if you think Ethereum is going to be over $500 at the end of 2018, you can bet 7 to win 10, and if you think it's not, you can bet 3 to win 10.
Yeah, and the difference between a prediction market like Augur and sports betting is that you can sell your shares at any time, which is actually because when you make a sports bet, it's locked in. If you buy it at 30 cents to say no, right? So
yes.
3 to win 10, and Ethereum takes a huge tank, and if the price shifts to like
50-50,
you can sell it at that. Well, you've made like a, what, like 70% profit. You can sell it at that profit right there.
And simultaneously, if you bet the no and you're like, wow, Ethereum is already over $1,000 and the line is now, instead of 30%, 15%, you could lose half of your stake there and sell it off there.
So those are the basics. And obviously, these types of markets exist in the United States. I think we talked about it last time on the show. But for those who weren't listening, you can do this in very legally in the United States. It's not really considered gambling because it's seen as academic research. And so,
how is that academic research?
Because it's like basically tied loosely to political science departments.
But you can put money on it?
Yeah.
So I can go put money right now legally in New York City on whether Donald Trump will win the next election.
Yes, for sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Online?
Yeah. Yes, online. It's all legal.
Really?
The problem with prediction markets is that they have very, very, very high costs of withdrawal, and which is what they do instead of charging a VIG, which is what a sports book would do.
Yep.
They charge a withdrawal fee, which I don't remember what the percentage is, but it's something that is completely prohibitive, and you have to be really good to beat that fee. So the appeal of a decentralized prediction market is, A, that you can come up with any question that you want and get people to bet on it, which is great, and that you don't have the withdrawal fee outside of whatever you're paying for the gas for the Ethereum network. And so the potential for this for being is amazing. You know, like it's really of all the, we used to say on the basement tapes, but also in the early tapes that like the projects that we thought were going to be successful earlier were all going to be gambling based. And this, in terms of, you know, outside of the small hiccups that we've had signing in, I will say for the first positive thing I think that I've said on this show about crypto in like maybe 6 months that the potential for Augur is fantastic. Now, the reality of it right now, like we don't know yet. So let's go through it a little more.
Last week we talked about predictions.global, which is basically a web interface for Augur in which you don't need to be logged in. You don't need to do anything. You can just look at the predictions. It does not, I will say, have nearly as rich information as actually being on Augur. And so you can see stuff once you're actually on Augur, like The volume of shares here.
This is for will Ethereum be over 500 at the end of 2018?
Yes. Yeah. 1,400 shares. So that each share represents one ETH.
Okay. So
that, means 1,400 ETH is what's been wagered.
Which is
on
about
this market.
Like at this point, what, like seven?
$642,000. Okay. So it's a pretty good amount of money. Once you start getting into other markets on Augur, you'll quickly find that there's almost no shares and no volume.
Yeah.
But this seems to be the topic people have most closely grabbed onto. And also, and I think this is going to be really interesting to look at, not so much now because it hasn't been up very long, but you can basically look at what this question has been trading at various historical periods.
Okay.
So it looks like the percentage chance that ETH will be over $500 at the end of 2018 has been going up, starting closer to 50-50, creeping up to 70% now.
Oh, wow. So it started out at 50-50.
Yeah, well, it's a little hard. There's so little volume, you can't really see where it is here. You can also see what the market depth is. Looks like right now, it's kind of stuck between 0.8 and 0.6. There's a lot of buy interest at 0.6 and a lot of sell interest at 0.8. That's for the yes market.
Oh, okay.
And there's really like a full order book here in which you can see. So the first thing you also notice is the bid and the ask are wildly divergent from each other.
Yeah. That's because there's not much volume. Like as there's more volume, the price will become more normalized, I think.
Okay. So I'm a little confused, Jay. You understand stuff a little better than I do. Right, the only outcome listed here is yes. So if I want to put a no in here, then I sell the yes position?
Yeah.
Okay. So you can sell something that you don't have.
Yeah.
Unlike in a crypto portfolio.
Yes.
So if I want one share and no, I sell one share.
Yeah. And look, this is an extremely confusing way in which they've done this. If you go on places like Predictit, you just click yes or no, and then it does it for you.
I assume that they will make this UI more friendly to the amateur gambler as time
goes. Yeah, I mean, saying yes or no is not that difficult of a choice.
Well, they're not all yes
no. Maybe we should have a no button, but yeah.
They also have multiple choice markets.
Sure, but you would think that putting no would make it a little bit easier, but sure. I mean, we don't have to complain about that right now.
So another thing here is they show you what the fee is, and this fee is not the gas fee. The gas fee that you pay to Ethereum is on top of it. When I was trying to make new markets, the fee was about $1.70.
Mm-hmm.
But this fee is a percentage-based fee, which goes to the creator of the market and those who report on the outcome of the market to ensure its veracity.
Okay, so this is like, for example, in the futures bets on some of the more exotic online sports books for a while.
Yeah.
There was a bet on whether or not Danica Patrick and Aaron Rodgers would break up by the end of 2017, I think it was.
Yeah.
And the terms for it was that the breakup had to be reported by TMZ.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
So, like, instead of that, it seems like what Augur has done is create, like, a sort of incentivized democratic way of litigating whether or not this is true.
Yeah, and my understanding is that you can actually earn the native token of Augur, reputation, by backing the right side, right? So if 100 people report on an issue and 98% of them are on one side and two are on the other side, then resolve to the 98 side and all 98 of those people get some small rep stake.
But okay, here's a question then.
Yeah.
Like, let's say that you and I put, like, 15 ETH into this bet, right? Which is
yep.
more than you or I have. But let's yeah. say that we're heavily leveraged into this bet.
Jay, do we have to put in 15 ETH for our very first bet? You degenerate.
Well, why couldn't we just, like, and we have like 500 friends who are also betting this market
yep.
at a certain price. Why couldn't we just, even if it doesn't go over $500, why couldn't we just vote the wrong issue or the wrong outcome as the outcome?
This is how I understand it to work. None of this is investment advice. Yeah. It's also not gambling advice.
Yeah.
It's not legal advice.
Also, we don't have 15 Ethereum, so please don't try and
it's not advice about how to get the rep token by reporting incorrect answers on Augur. So I think it works sort of like a 51% attack, right? You actually, the people who are putting, you stake your own rep when you say what the outcome was. And all of the people, once it becomes a majority, they, the people who were picked the right side, steal the rep from the people who were repping the wrong side. So if you and your friends got together and tried to brute force the untrue outcome, an even larger group of Augur people could come on and put in the right outcome, and they would then win your rep because they're right. Now, if you have the 51%, you know, good man. But that's kind of generally how all crypto stuff works, is if you can get a large enough pool of people to try to defraud it, you can do it.
Well, so like we're dealing with extremely metaphysical questions about truth.
Yeah, yeah, yes, yeah.
If you get enough people to say that something is not true that is true and you have money on it, then you can actually make that the actual outcome.
Yes.
As it relates to this specific bet.
But this is an interesting topic, which is I had always thought, like, have you owned the Augur token?
No.
Okay, I own some Augur, some rep. And I thought that I would be betting with that rep. Not true. All the bets are made and settled with Ethereum. Rep is only used in this verification rewards system.
Okay.
Which brings up a question I want to ask later when we have our good friend Ledger on, which is, why is the rep token going to go up in value if this is popular?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I mean, like all ERC-20 tokens, it seems like they're a little bit vague about what it actually did at the beginning. And what it actually does is it facilitates actions within inner layer things within the product, which is how most ERC-20 tokens actually work if you look at the use case for it. Not that compelling to me, I gotta say.
So let's look at this market. It's the most popular market. It's got the most liquidity. Where do we want to come in here on this ETH over $500, the end of 2018 issue?
Okay, so you and I have talked about this for the past 3 days, and we have decided that we should bet no on basically every single crypto bet. We should take the bearish position.
We're
going to
act. We should act like some no coiners, basically. Yeah. And the reason we should hate on crypto
is that there's three things that I think are happening here, just from studying it in a very cursory way. The first is that a lot of the biggest markets seem to be have created by people who are somehow linked to Augur. So the second most popular market is, will the rep token be over $32 by the end of 2018?
That one makes sense. I mean, this is one of the promises of Augur, is that we can have an options market for any coin ever. Sumo coin could have its own futures market.
Well, I mean, I'm surprised that you haven't started it already. So I think that there's a lot of people who are incentivized on saying yes. The Bitcoin crypto community is extremely bullish by nature and probably overconfident in prices.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that this would be similar to saying if you had a prediction market that said, and the last thing being that almost everyone who uses Augur is definitely heavy into crypto.
Yeah.
It's kind of like if you had a prediction market saying, like, will Donald Trump be impeached, and every single person in that market was like a resistance Twitter type of person. Obviously, that market would be wrong, you know?
Yes.
So my assumption would be that all the bullish market predictions for crypto for the end of 2018 are probably going to be inflated way heavily in the yes direction.
To take that idea even further, well, like, we're basically saying that Augur users are probably on tilt, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I would believe that there's some
permatilt,
some Bitcoin haters in the mix, but I think you're going to see a lot of ETH fans.
Yeah.
This is a ERC-20 token. It's been, it rapidly shot up to be one of the most used Ethereum apps. Like within the first couple of days it was out. So this market, this first market, should be one of the most tilty markets on here.
Yeah.
The sort of long Ethereum market.
And the way that prediction markets, and actually any betting works, is that large bets swing the number proportionally. So if 200 people bet one Ethereum,
right,
and one guy bets 200 Ethereum, they have the same exact effect. And so I imagine that as this thing started, just like CryptoKitties, just like crypto art auctions, there are some whales who want to see this thing work, just because, not because they think they're going to even make money off the bet,
yeah,
but because they want these things to be healthy because it's better for the entire ecosystem.
Right.
And I cannot imagine that any of those people would vote no. And so I think we probably have some whales who are betting yes just to sort of seed this thing. And I think the best option would be to kind of like go against them.
Right. Okay. So the fact that there's this big spread between the ask and the bid, if we put in a bid here for a no, or if we put in we sell in order to get some
we sell some
no
yes
shares, Does someone else have to take the other side of that bet for it to...
I don't know how this one works, but generally, if you use like a prediction market, then all that those mechanics are done without you having to worry about it.
Right. Okay.
So what are we gonna do here? Are we shorting Ethereum here?
Well, the weird thing is, Are you holding any Ethereum?
No.
See, I've got Ethereum in my bag, so I guess if I bet Ethereum under 500, I'm basically hedging.
Yeah. But you're hedging at a good percentage, because like if we can get it, the price at like 30 cents to a dollar, and it goes up to 80 cents a dollar, then you've done basically what, like almost 2.6 something to one,
right?
Which is a great hedge because, you know, you're getting that extra value in there.
Okay, so let me ask you a couple questions about that. Do we worry that Ethereum is going to be at 502 on January 1st, and we're gonna get double racks?
That's a disaster for us, but I'm not so worried that it'll be at 502.
Okay, let me ask you one more question. 500, nice round number. A lot of people are looking at Ethereum 500 the way that we used to look at Bitcoin 10,000, you know?
Are they, though? Because, I mean, Ethereum's already got up to, like, 1,200.
Here's what I'm saying. If it's December 31st and Ethereum's sitting at 497...
Yeah, I think that we're in trouble.
Are some bulltards going to come together and look at it and say we can wreck a bunch of these shorts by getting it over 500?
I don't know, because if there was, like, let's say that there was 500,000 Ethereum in this market, then I would say maybe there is some fear of that. But right now we're at 1,400 Ethereum, which is
really
not that
much money.
But
this only launched this week, and there's 1,400 shares. I mean... this may get more and more popular.
The market cap of Ethereum is enough where I'm not so worried about that.
Yeah. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to act like idiots now, and then we're going to call Ledger and get him to tell us everything we did wrong.
Okay,
we're going to fully live our... So I'm going to say our bet... Ethereum is currently sitting at... Ethereum is at 468.
Yeah.
Okay? So if we bet it right now, and we bet, let's say... 0.05, that's like $20 worth of Ethereum.
I think I'd go heavier.
For our introductory dumb bet, we have to make it bigger. We just described how we were probably doing this wrong.
let's do at least 0.1.
I'm reimbursing myself out of show funds for this. Okay. So
tax deductible.
So if you put in 0.1 on the sell side, it automatically inputs the bid price, which is only 6.63, even though we've been quoted a 70% medium price.
Oh, wow, that sucks. Can we change that? There's a little clicky bar over there.
Let's see. So can we change it to 0.70, but will...
Someone has to take that then.
Someone has to take that. So we're basically just... Yeah. And then there's a checkbox for fill orders only.
What was the default? Let's go with the default.
Default was off.
Okay, so let's go with default because we don't know what we're doing.
Okay, right, then we're going to hit review. Right. So this is good. If we win this bet, we will make a 233% profit.
All right. That sounds good to me.
If we lose this bet, we will lose our entire share, which is 0.075F.
Yeah, so we're getting plus 230 on our money, which is a pretty good price.
But we don't know if this is actually going to work because we just quoted a higher price.
So confirm sell. Let's see what happens.
Okay, I'm going to confirm the sell.
My degen.
Okay, so then you click confirm and it opens a MetaMask window.
Oh, no.
So it looks like we're going to pay $1.60 transaction fee.
Okay.
And I'm sending $36 in ETH, 0.07. Okay. All right, here we go.
Did it work?
It says order placed.
Okay, so we don't have it yet.
No, someone's got... Hey, if you're listening,
and you're
some kind of an F head,
someone buy our action, please. Brian Armstrong.
Hey, I'm going to pause things here for just a moment to tell you about a podcast from Tech Meme, who are our sponsor. So techmeme.com is the place to go if you want all of the latest stories about tech. They link to them several times a day. You find out what you've missed. Instead of making you click through all of those, they've made a podcast that distills all of the best headlines, context, and conversation to a daily show. It comes out Monday through Friday around 5 p.m. Eastern, about 15, 20 minutes, and it's about the top stories of the day in tech. If you enjoy this podcast because it helps keep you up to date in crypto and you like something similar in the tech world that's actually much higher quality and comes out more frequently, check out the Tech Meme Ride Home. It's hosted by Brian McCullough, who has also been hosting the Internet History Podcast for the last 4 years. I think he's a little bit like Marketplace on NPR, but for purely tech news. You can find it in your podcast app under Tech Meme Ride Home. That's T-E-C-H-M-E-M-E, Ride Home. Please subscribe. Supporting the sponsors helps support this show. Everybody wins. I really appreciate the Tech Meme has gotten out in front and helped support the show. So giant thanks to them. Here we are, back with the show. Should we call Ledger?
Yeah. Okay, let's see what we did wrong.
Hey.
Hey, Ledger, a.k.a. Brian.
How's it going, guys?
Is it okay to call you Brian on... Is it okay to use your government name in this crypto broadcasting space?
Yeah, my government name is fine.
So we've been trying to get our way through Augur, and we got a few questions for you, because I know that, unlike myself, you've dabbled in the futures market before Augur made it easy to do on the Ethereum blockchain.
I think easy is a relative statement, considering I'm still unable to connect. They make you run a full node of Augur, and like, unless you're a real crypto nerd, like downloading software and syncing an entire blockchain and trying to run a full node is a very strange way to get users. But that's what they're requiring.
Are you using the mainnet, the Infura one?
Yes. And if you connect to some of the others, it's easier. But connecting to the mainnet is incredibly hard.
I connected some of the other ones and they didn't work also. So you're not missing anything.
Yeah, I was able to connect to one. But nevertheless, your proclamation of it being simple, I challenge.
It's so easy to run an Ethereum node. Tell me how.
That said, I have dabbled in margin trading and to a lesser degree, but still futures markets, but also like options and traditional markets. And all of those are trying to predict the future. But true futures trading, which is what this kind of is, there's all this theory that you can apply to it, and you can do it for a whole lot of reasons. So I think the launch of Augur and what they're enabling is fascinating. And there's this example that everyone's been using because it's the most popular Augur betting market right now. Have y'all checked that one out?
Yeah, yes, we just placed our first bet. You will be shocked to know that we have already degened into betting on this thing just after, I would say like about 44 minutes after we signed on for the first time.
Well, I'll say we were considering waiting and having you vet our bet first, but instead we decided to carry on with the tradition of this show and do something stupid and then get someone to explain why it was stupid after we had done it. So
if you had like put a heart rate monitor on me during that whole time, the second the button came up that said place order, my heart rate would have spiked. We're like, do it.
I'll recap.
Do it now.
That we were like, let's just make a stupid small bet for the show. And then I input it, and Jay was like, come on, a bit more than that. So, I think it says something initially. Just, Brian, in your government name life, you're deeply involved in WordPress development. And the fact that you're not easily able to load this suggests it's maybe not totally ready for prime time yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even so much the onboarding, though that's difficult too. Like, you have to know like what an executable file is if you're on Windows and a DMG. Like, it sends you to their GitHub to get started, and you have to download the correct one if you're Mac, Windows,
you need
or Linux.
EXE file?
Well, only on Windows, and Mac is a DMG.
On Windows, on Mac.
I sanitized my whole description of this. I was like, you just download the app, and then you boot it up, then you connect to Infura, then you're on, then you load it in the web browser, then you need a MetaMask account, and then you take the MetaMask account.
It felt very much like someone from Augur had gotten to Aaron to explain that this was a really easy process. I was like, this seems impossible.
This is basically a decentralized exchange where the participants are creating the markets. So I don't understand why the Augur Foundation or a company, you know, most of these are like a foundation and a company, like someone doesn't make a commercial website running Augur and just tack on a little extra fee for the ease of use of using a website, but all the custody and everything is still through MetaMask and Ledgers and Trezors and stuff.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brian. Well, I was thinking that a couple of days ago when we first talked about this, that it wouldn't be that hard to just even make an app You know, like it doesn't even have to be a phone app, like a browser, in which you could just hit yes or no and it'd be really easy. I don't understand why that it doesn't exist, because it would make the launch a lot more exciting, because like you wouldn't have to go through all these difficult processes, and it would actually make the markets bigger, which I think would probably entice more people to trust it to actually put money into it.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, I don't know. So I still haven't heard what this first bet was. What was the market? And then let me guess which way you
bet.
Well,
so the number one market, you'll be unsurprised that the first things to catch on here are cryptocurrency for futures, and the biggest market is for Ethereum. So mm-hmm. the bet is, will the price of Ethereum exceed $500 at the end of 2018?
Okay. And we were talking about this a little earlier. The going rate of this was like 0.85, and this is on a 0 to 1 scale.
That turns out not to be true.
Okay. So what was the rate?
There's kind of several different amounts. It sort of ranges between 63 and 83.
Yeah, it's normal market stuff where
the spread is only like 20% of the entire market.
It actually reminds me of sneaker sales and buys, you know, where if you try to get a specific type of sneaker and there isn't much market for it, but it's a pretty rare sneaker, that you'll see such a wide range between the bids and the asks that it makes you could get it from anywhere between $240 and $490, and both, it just depends on the luck of what you actually get. So spread in this does sort of reflect any type of market that doesn't have that much volume in it.
So we could have just bought at 63. 63 is the bid that's just sitting out there. We didn't want that, so we put in a 70. And so let's just pretend someone takes our 70.
Brian, take it.
You're the no side
take
of the 70.
We're taking the no side. Do you want to take the other side? How's your progress on downloading the Ethereum blockchain over there?
With that degree of spread, I feel like you're really wanting to make a bet that there's enough time for you to be right. So I'm only that's a 30% chance over 500. I'm actually quite confident Ethereum will be over 500 at some point in 2018. So this is one of the ones where I think I'd be willing to take at least a small position at 71, because at some point in 2018, that will probably be correct. But I'm not sure about the end of 2018. So sure, I'd be willing to get on the other side of that, even though I don't necessarily think it's fairly priced. So I would not necessarily take that because I think it's the right price right now, but more that I think that at some point in the year, I would be able to get out of that position.
Okay, so the theory then, the way that the prediction markets work, is that you're saying that at some point, Ethereum will be $520, and that many more bullish people will get into this market, and that it'll go from 70, say, if you bought it at 70, to 80, and that you would sell at the 10% profit there. Like, you would see a profit opportunity there because you felt like the second it goes over 500, people will feel some combination of bullishness and confirmation bias, and they'll say it'll never go under 500 at this point. And that they would buy into the yes side.
That's right. So that gives me about 14 or 15% on that 10 cent swing. Yeah, I'd be okay with that, even though I don't love it. What I think is interesting about that, though, is that there are other places where you can play Ethereum. So I think the being able to play in two markets at once on both Augur and then some other platform and essentially arbitrage the inefficiency of Augur is more interesting. So in a case like that,
where else would someone be able to make a bet like this on Ethereum?
On Ethereum, you can margin trade Ethereum. It's not necessarily Ethereum futures, but you can do Ethereum futures on BitMEX if you're either not an American or you're a dishonest American. Or you can do margin trading for Ethereum on Kraken. And then I think OneFox is opening up Ethereum markets at some point soon. So there's ways to do it. You know, if you're clever and if you're patient, you can probably find betting markets in general on Augur that are super inefficient and then go to more efficient markets and take the other side of the bet and then essentially guarantee yourself the middle.
Yeah.
So is that how most people play these kind of markets? Not as I'm going to sit on this hold all this share until January 1st and either win or lose. But most people are looking at them as an asset that they intend to trade, buy, sell over the course of that period.
Yes. Going to closure is not necessarily the goal. The traditional futures market really is for people looking to hedge a current position. So it's not necessarily a purely speculative because I think this is going to be $500 in December. But imagine futures for corn, and you're a corn farmer, and you're planning your year, and you want to guarantee that you get, I have no idea what the price of corn is, but let's say you want to get like...
It's like 99 cents an ear.
What's that?
It's like 99 cents an ear right now. It's at the supermarket near my house.
That's super random. Okay, so let's let's say the corn farmer, their market is 50 cents an ear, right? And they know that's historically a good price, so they want to lock that in. So they may hedge the current price to guarantee that they can get the current price, so that once their yield comes in 4 or 5 months, they think there's some downside risk, then they're worried that they're not going to be able to get that price in the future. So essentially, you can lock in a current price because you're worried about the future price, and that's by hedging futures versus what you have on spot.
A famous example of that is airlines do that with the price of gas.
That's right.
Or the price of crude oil. They hedge themselves against increases in the price of airline fuel.
And that's by agreeing that they'll pay, if airline fuel was $5 a gallon at some point. And Southwest actually got big because of this. Like their profit margin was enormous because they locked in the price of fuel before, whenever there was a huge spike and the price of gas went way up, like well above $3 or something. And they had locked in, $1.50 gas, and their profit margins were way better than everybody else. And that's how they became a low price leader.
Brian, so one thing that is interesting to me here is that when I was thinking about this and the idea of making your own market, that the biggest opportunities and the biggest thing that was interesting to me was what you said, is that you could find these arbitrage opportunities. The problem with exotics in sports betting or just general betting is that they cap the action on it, right? So that you can only, if you know who's going to win American Idol, for example, right, and there's action on it, the most you can put on it probably is like $500, and that's how they kind of insure against massive losses on things that are such small and specific bets that somebody might actually know the outcome or might be able to influence the outcome. The interesting thing about Augur is that there doesn't seem to be any cap on any of these things. So how do you think this economy is going to sort of stabilize itself, and how do you think people are going to be able to protect themselves from massive losses, or is the whole point that you can't do that?
Yeah, it seems to me that their whole perspective is enabling this more free market concept. And the question will be, will that completely blow up, right? So one of the critiques that I've heard of Augur is they're spending years trying to solve problems that are honestly just better solved by a centralized entity. So they're trying to create this reputation token mechanism around it to somehow improve on the centralized systems. And whether that'll work or not, we don't know. That's the glory of all of these decentralized applications, where you're taking something that works, even if it's got some quirks, in the real world, and you're saying, all right, we're going to do all this in a decentralized manner. And I think they're not going to know a lot of the issues until they encounter them, and I'm sure they've done a lot of study to try to figure it out. But like that example you just said, who knows if the people who designed Augur are planning for that. And there's some scenario that comes along that they can easily manipulate and pump up to some enormous degree. And we'll just have to see what happens. It'll be nice fireworks.
Here's a scenario that Aaron and I talked about a little bit, which is that if all the yes or no, for example, so basically if truth is meted out by rep tokens and 51%. So if Donald Trump loses, you could actually vote theoretically that he won and that you would win that bet, right? What would prevent somebody, for example, then to basically place 5,000 random markets that only a few people will be interested in, that they might eventually even forget that they were part of, hoard rep tokens, and then use that to win every single one of those bets, even if you lost it? There's all these weird opportunities for cheating in something that's this decentralized, where it does seem easier to just have somebody being like, nope, Donald Trump actually lost the election or won the election, whatever the truth is. This seems like an amazingly complicated and easily manipulable thing that I do think eventually would sort of equalize into like a reasonable and trustless market. But I think that might take years, you know, like I just don't see how that happens so quickly.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know that I was watching some other videos where people had talked about the way governance works in terms of verifying results. And, you know, you've got the reporters in rep. Did y'all read any about that or discuss that at all yet?
Yeah.
And just tell our listeners about it.
Yeah, tell our listeners.
Yeah, so basically you have someone responsible for reporting on the result, and the market creator is already saying, like, well, this is going to be solved by news items or, like, news media. And the reporter is going to come in and provide the sourcing like a Wikipedia editor would to say, like, here's the evidence that Donald Trump won the election. But then someone participating in that market, they can use the rep token and then come say, no, that's not true. The reporter messed that up. And there's this appeals process. And they can say, I'm putting my rep at stake. So that's where the thing comes from, I think. I'm putting my rep at stake to say Donald Trump actually lost. And we act like this is a joke, but like, all of us are old enough to remember butterfly ballots and the year 2000.
This is not a joke.
It's a fake news token.
Roger, if I read you correctly, you're saying that you can use the rep token to fight the fake news media?
That's amazing.
Yeah, so you can use it to appeal
Jay just
it.
Bought a bot, huge bag.
Yeah, this is the biggest, this is the most bullish sign for rep I've ever heard.
But if it's unsettled, my understanding of it is then you lose it. So like if you're just saying like, hey, this is wrong, what they reported, and then somehow you're proven out, and I don't remember exactly how that works, then you actually lose your rep. Like, so you're putting your rep at stake for this result. But like,
isn't it kind of like a 51% attack where like if enough people say you were right or wrong, you win or lose or something like that?
Yeah, I would assume so. And that's got to be the one scenario that they're hyper aware of. So like, I don't know what they've got to figure that out. But I'm just picturing like, what if the year 2000 is repeated in some way? So like in that scenario, you know, like Bush versus Gore, you don't know for months. And these decentralized applications, it's like, oh, well, the election happened. Within 7 days, you have to report the result. And like, who won election?
There's also a market for who is Satoshi.
Oh, nice. So how do you resolve that? The yes and the no, neither can really win.
I'm going to try and get Jay to put some money where his mouth is. Okay. With this Dorian Nakamoto is Satoshi. He's advancing.
I don't know if you heard, Brian, but Aaron and I are both convinced that Excerpt Toshi, the guy who put out the book Excerpt, is actually Satoshi. I don't know if you want to keep having us on your broadcast after we said that, but we're convinced.
I listened to that episode. I remember I was doing dishes, and I think I was scrubbing the dishes a little harder as y'all were like, you know, I think you might be Satoshi.
our reasoning was that it's so clearly not Satoshi that it has to be Satoshi.
We were like, the logic, these details don't make any sense if you're not actually Satoshi. Like, my grandmother worked at a publishing house.
It's like Satoshi just got drunk one night and was like, you know what, I'm going to tell my story.
Do you think that couldn't happen? Like, too many pina coladas and St. Kitts? And then it was just like, you know what? Fuck it.
I got home from a Buffett concert and I was jazzed.
Siri, I will say that the Satoshi one is interesting to me because, like, the way that prediction markets first started was that DARPA was trying to use them to try and figure out where terrorist attacks were, right? This is something we talked about on the last episode. And they thought that if a lot of late money came in or big money came in on one of the places, that it meant that maybe somebody knew something, right? Yeah. With Satoshi, I feel like if that market ever swings huge in one direction, that actually is a clue, don't you?
I mean, it would be the most libertarian move ever to bet heavily on who Satoshi is if you are Satoshi and then win the who is Satoshi bet by coming out.
That's how it is predictive. Like, that was the idea, was that, like, you know, somebody in Al-Qaeda or something like that would find this thing and think of it as a way to make money, and that they would just sort of out everybody by betting on it. And then the line would swing. I mean, do you think that, like, in that way, I think it's actually kind of interesting. What do you think?
I I think it would be interesting and help garner attention for Augur. So the people that are motivated for Augur to be popular should look into that and figure out how to hype it up. Whether it would work, I don't know. I mean, people do that with like bug bounties and stuff, right? So there's still a huge bounty if you can hack SegWit. They did this before SegWit went live, and it was actually on Litecoin, and nobody's hacked SegWit. So like, sometimes things just aren't knowable or are so supremely difficult that even when there are millions of dollars available to you, you're not going to know. I know a journalist like you who's actually been on the Satoshi beat, it's got to just be frustrating that this is a nut you can't crack.
I've divested from journalism. No. Okay, but Brian, like, all right, so this is the scenario. Let's say that there's five choices, right? Excerpt Toshi, Craig Wright, Dorian Nakamoto.
Excerpt Toshi is not in the top five.
Neither Aaron is Craig Wright or Dorian Nakamoto.
Yeah, and let's say that at some point this market has, like, let's say it has $2 million in it. And then $5 million comes in on Aaron, right? Wouldn't you think that that was kind, like, would you see that as any evidence that perhaps Aaron was about to come out as with irrefutable proof that he was Satoshi Nakamoto? Because that's how a prediction market is supposed to work.
Yeah, it's possible. I like the incentive, right? In that case, though, I think there is a lot of incentive already for knowing who Satoshi is. So you would think the people that are incentivized in that regard would be hot on it, right? Do you really think an Augur prediction market would add a lot to that?
No. I mean, that you just crushed me. I have no, clearly not.
I mean,
but I still might.
It wouldn't until there are like hundreds of millions of dollars moving on there, and then you start getting in some like weird snitching situations that could be interesting.
Yeah, like if it was like if Aaron was like 80-1 and it was Aaron, and I knew it was Aaron, and I was broke, and Aaron was not going to give me any of his million Bitcoin, right? I might just take all the money I have and put it on Aaron and get like whatever, like 80-1 and then out Aaron.
This is the way to finally take down Craig Wright once and for all, is be like, if you're really Satoshi, you have to put your net wealth on the yourself bet on the Augur Satoshi market.
This
is still gameable.
Yeah, I deleted my Twitter and he also had me blocked, but Aaron, you should tweet that out.
Craig Wright has refused a lot of opportunities to claim his Satoshi-ness.
He's turned down opportunities to put his own skin into his own game.
Yeah, I agree with what y'all said in the previous episode, for what it's worth, that like it makes most sense to be Hal Finney and friends, perhaps. But I can't imagine a world where Hal Finney wasn't one of the people involved. I think there's a decent argument for Sabo as well, but I don't see a great argument for Craig Wright.
Would either of you guys take the field? Would like if I gave you like the big four, like Sabo, Finney, Craig Wright, who else is on that list?
Excerpt Toshi
versus the field versus everyone else on Earth. I think I'd just take everyone else on Earth.
Well, it depends on the bet. Like if it was somebody, if Hal Finney was involved in all, does that cancel the bet? Like I would need some sort of hedge like that. But
so that market's probably never gonna get resolved, right?
I don't know. I think we'll eventually know who's.
What happens in an unsolved market? Do you just have to leave your Ethereum and your rep in the market forever?
that's a great question.
I guess you could sell it, but.
But you don't know what the value of the market's going to be.
Yeah, and who's going to buy that from you? Also,
outside of like silly theoretical ideas, Brian. Like we wanted to call you because you're the guy who we know who understands the full ecosystem of different hedge opportunities of different markets the most. When you look at Augur, what is the most exciting opportunity for you in trading terms?
He's still at 74%. He can't look at the market.
No, I restarted. I'm back to 0%. So
you can see the markets on predictions.global, though, even if you're not, if you don't have.
Yeah, but they're wrong. I'm now convinced that somebody gave you a bunch of rep tokens to gloss over all the problems.
Is showing some kind of a median price that's like not actually what you can buy, but it's close enough for argument.
All right. So are you going to use this as a way to hedge out of certain things? Are you going to use this as a way to sort of hedge certain positions? Like if you do hold Ethereum, which I don't know if you do or not right now, you don't have to say, but if you were holding it, like, would you consider this as a hedge opportunity, or do you think there are better hedge opportunities out there?
I think there will be better hedge opportunities, specifically for Americans trying to play futures and derivatives markets for crypto is a difficult thing to do. You can margin trade on Kraken, but really for Americans, other than that, there's no easy options. And even that scenario is not futures or options or anything like that. And really the what this creates is a potential options market where there you can create a lot of creative things. And what's most bullish on it for me is that there are active conversations, tweets that I've seen from like the 0x network saying that they'll offer grants to people willing to create markets for Augur. So essentially Augur could operate the same as other decentralized exchanges, and you could even share liquidity and other, you know, things like that. And if you can bring liquidity to some of these bigger questions, you can have a derivatives market that looks a lot like what we see with options and futures in other places, where you can do that in a decentralized manner, where you're maintaining custody of your own coins. There's a technology layer there that I think is really interesting and could work well. And in that scenario, if it was a little more liquid, I think I could use it as a real hedge or speculation opportunity. In the meantime, I mostly consider it the type of thing where you can just game the inefficiency of the market. Because when you have 20% on that ETH bet or Ethereum bet between like whatever it was, 65 and 80 or something, then that's not very much fun, and you don't really want to put a proper position hedge on that. So you're really just doing it to goof around.
Too late. Guilty.
Yeah, guilty. How much liquidity are you talking about right now? Like how big do these markets have to be to function in any way like a, you know, like a options or derivatives market that you could buy at Schwab or
there's about $642,000 currently in, riding on that question.
Yeah. Well, liquidity in general can be a problem anywhere. Like I bought puts for a stock today that is not a particularly liquid stock for options, right? And this is in the traditional in New York Stock Exchange, but it's not.
Call your pick, Ledge. Call your pick.
What's that?
What was the stock? We need your tips.
This was Southern Company, which is one that I've liked for a while for the dividend. It's a utility company, and utilities have been destroyed. So when it got destroyed, I bought more down around 43 or something like that. And it's up, I don't know, 12, 14% since then, and it's at resistance now. And I don't want to sell the underlying because I have a long-term position. So therefore, to protect the overhead and the fact that I like the dividend, I decided to buy some puts because therefore, if it goes down, I'm not selling and having a long-term tax hit, right? So I'm not owing capital gains taxes for selling the position. At the same time, I'm not penalized when it comes down. And if it continues to go up, then my spot position makes up for what I lose in the premiums of the options. So that's an example of using options to hedge your bet. And in a market like that, for Southern Company, buying options is actually, you know, it's really a high spread. So like the spread on the option is like 10%. And that's a public company with a multi-billion dollar cap. So options in the crypto space, they'll be so obscure on Augur because anyone can make up anything they want, right? And make it look like an option or mirror what an options market looks like. So I imagine there'll be some really interesting ones that pop up around the big networks, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum and whatever else, and maybe there's some liquidity around those. But you'll also be right next door to like the equivalent of like playing penny stocks or, you know, doing options and stuff like that, next to like Jay's sports parlays where he's betting on like gymnastics and the NFL at the same time.
Wow.
Wait, Jay, I want to blow up your like centralized Augur where you make the market that people can use.
Yeah.
And I think you should allow parlaying where you can parlay like three Augur bets into an Augur super bet.
Can you do an Augur parlay?
Not yet.
But you could create
it's called a Kang special.
You could create a market of will I win these three bets?
Will Jay succeed?
You might eventually get a better price than the actual parlay would give you.
Okay, so Ledger, we want to run how we traded this one, and you tell us what you think. So we went in this really dumb. I didn't really think about trading my position at all. I just thought about buying a position and holding it till the expiration.
Yeah, we just were, will we be right or wrong? That was and our only concern.
We don't really know what the chance Ethereum's going to be over $500. It feels like it's better than 50%, but maybe, I don't know what it is. But we looked at who's probably betting right now on Augur. It's a bunch of early adopters. Augur is a total eth world darling. It's people who are bullish on Ethereum. So whatever they're buying this at, we were like, they're probably a little too bullish on Ethereum. We should take the other side.
Hmm. Completely agree with the logic.
Okay. Now, knowing that that's our strategy, should we hold it along the way, you think? Or should we dump it at some point? Like, at some point, let's say there's some sort of regulatory snafu and Ethereum dumps a bunch. Would you hold on to it there, or would you say, no, this is great. This is my chances are now improved, and I'm just going to hold my position.
We're assuming that you got filled at 70, right? So a 70% chance of yes.
70% chance.
So you're taking the 30% chance.
Is there anywhere I could look this up and understand like what it's trading at somewhere else?
So I liked this bet a lot better when I thought it was at 85, right? So when they're saying there's a 70% chance, I don't like it as much. But I still look at this, which is Ethereum got to something like $1,400. And people are pretty bearish right now. And Ethereum, even though Bitcoin has had this dump, that which got me on the podcast, it's been $1,000.
Ring the bell. Ring.
What happened?
I told when I did the promo for Ledger's podcast, I said that he should come back on Coin Talk when we saw an $1,000 bounce from the bottom.
Oh.
And the bottom was what, like 5,800 or something?
Yeah. So that when we were recording, that was probably the bottom. Me and Aaron probably sounded a little extra depressed.
But anyway, check out my friend's podcast. It's great. Bitcoin, so much fun.
So even though Bitcoin has recovered, Ethereum has relative to Bitcoin has been getting hit pretty hard. So it's not been getting as good of USD gains as Bitcoin has. So I'm actually pretty confident that we're going to go above 500 at some point in 2018. The hardest part to me is that will you be right at the end of the year? Because you're trying to time exactly when it is. Because I'm also not convinced that we're not going to see another round of lows. Like we could just be ranging for a good long while. But can we get to a third of the all-time high at some point over the next 6 months? That's not that hard of a bet. And really, I think
$500 yesterday.
Yeah, and
it hit $500.
I don't think 500 is that huge of a milestone for Ethereum.
The other problem that we have here is that, and Brian, tell me what you think, Aaron, you too, which is that it just dawned on me that if this is a biased market, right, towards being bullish, then will a spike up to like 520? Will it make us more underwater than we should be? And will there be more sell side action when there should be if everyone who's involved in this needs to try to download this app 17 different times and it has such a high bar to entry? Like, will the only people here be Ethereum maximalists so that even when we should be seeing like swing from 70 to 50%, it might not happen?
Yes, I think that's a great possibility.
Fuck, dude.
But that's good. But then we just hold it and let it expire and hope we win.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So the only way that we can do this, and look, please tell me if I'm wrong. I'm probably wrong. Is that my theory now at this point is that what Aaron and I should do is that we should buy all the way up and then hope that we win. So we should not hedge our bet, but that we should continue to double down on our bet over and over and over again. Under the idea that the market is overvalued.
And I'm assuming in this plan, we keep betting more and more each of these times.
Yeah. We keep pressing our bet. What do you think?
I cannot encourage somebody to double down on a losing position. But I do agree the smart time to put on a position like that is when there is bullish sentiment within a bear market, right? So then you're getting better pricing for your already existing bias. Your already existing bias is that we're not going to end the year at 500. So therefore, if we pop above 500, but it looks like, you know, that's the tip, we're exhausted to get to 500, that's actually a pretty good time to buy it. So you could buy it even when it's fulfilled and the market is actually really, really cheap to buy the no side. That might be a good time to buy it if you still have a bearish bias, because then it's just, maybe, so let's say it's at like 90 or 92 or something like that. You're getting the no side for like 8 cents, right? And in that scenario, it could be a really attractive bet.
Yeah, load the hell up.
Yeah, I would argue that the, I think what you said was bullish sentiment in a bearish market. Doesn't that pretty much describe today?
Yes.
Especially like Ethereum users on Augur.
All right, let's double our bet right now.
Not yet.
No,
I don't
but
think
we
your bet is that bad.
You can put in limit buys at whatever price you want. And so we could actually just theoretically put like a scaling up series of limit bets for, or limit sells.
You have to get your own account if you're going to do that. I'm not going to keep lending you my MetaMask account.
It's going
to
be the $500 Ethereum market whale. Like, you want to be on this Ledger sell side, you got to get past
like,
me.
Oh, you like, what's wrong? You look very stressed out. Oh, man, I'm so leveraged.
Ethereum's $480.
There's like one endpoint that just pinged 24 hours a day. It's Jay refreshing the market. Ledger, we had a question that came up earlier, and I know you trade a lot of alts, which is, I hold Augur. I've had an Augur bag for a while, and I always thought, oh, when Augur comes out, I'll be betting with Augur. And if a lot of people bet with Augur, that'll make Augur valuable. The betting's actually with Ethereum. And the rep is used in this scheme that we discussed for verifying the truth. Why, if Augur does become popular and we start seeing a lot of volume in these markets, why will rep go up? Or will it?
A lot of tokens have arguable value in their utility. So like they may have utility, but that doesn't necessarily mean they have value. So another one that y'all have had at times, I've had for the majority of its time, except for when it got listed on Coinbase, was ZRX. And ZRX's only value model, as another example, is basically for the sake of governance. And the founder of ZRX was defending that in the face of criticism when someone was saying, why should I hold ZRX? It's not needed to use the ZRX protocol. It's just for the value of governance of said protocol. So I don't think the limited use case for rep being that you don't have to have rep to use the market, I don't think that that necessarily makes rep valueless. But if people really dig into it, I think that from a true utility perspective, it really doesn't make a ton of sense that it needs to be very expensive. So I don't necessarily think the token economics are great. I also don't think it matters that much from a speculation standpoint because people don't do that research and they're more interested in the fact that Augur could very well end up being the most popular Ethereum dApp and that uses rep, et cetera. And they do have a couple of token mechanisms within that dApp that I've just learned about today. But the fact that you don't have to have Augur, I don't necessarily think is terrible.
This is something that has always bugged me about the crypto space, the altcoin space, which is that like it seems like it is banking on some level of stupidity by the buyers, right? And so,
how could
like,
you believe that to ever happen?
Can you
is essentially that most of the people who buy this see it as a security for new company and that they don't understand that the token itself is not what we are kind of vaguely saying that the token might be. And so then they buy it and then it comes out and the product comes out and it turns out that the token is basically a way to put in votes for something that if you are putting in any amount of money that you don't necessarily care to even do. And that I don't know, I find that to be a little bit scammy, gotta say.
I also think it's what people want, which is I would want to own some of Augur.
Yeah, I would want to own part of the company.
Yeah.
But buying the token is not that. And I just think that at some point people will stop being tricked by this. Like, they will stop thinking in this sort of way. And that, I don't know what that does to the altcoin market, or if that actually has already happened at this point. I don't know. But, like, you know, like, when we were buying 0x very early on, Brian, you and me, we couldn't quite articulate what the use case for it would be, right? But we just liked the project itself. Now, it seems like maybe that's just the wrong way to think about it. I don't know. What do you think?
You know, there are people on Twitter that wear suits in their profiles, and they have, like, these algorithms for classifying the value of a token, and it includes the velocity of the tokens in and out and all these other things. And I don't really care about all that. I agree with what you just said, which is that, for the most part, the utility of the token and making the token expensive is sometimes at odds with the encouragement of using the dApp or whatever, the protocol, and therefore the incentives don't make a lot of sense. I totally agree that most people are like, well, how can we make this idea of ours a utility token, because we want to raise $30 million in an ICO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've long said on my own podcast that I would love to see most people call a spade a spade. And I think we're leaning towards that, where people will try, as securities markets, tokenized securities markets open up, more people will go that route. And then what makes that interesting is that, especially for Americans, like, there's this new talk of legislation where the requirements for being an accredited investor open up, so that if you don't make $200,000 or are a millionaire, you might actually be able to participate in those markets. Meanwhile, that we have utility tokens instead, or currencies, right? So, like, Bitcoin isn't really a utility token or anything. It's just a currency. And we can participate in that too, because the CFTC called it a commodity. So I think what we'll see is this combination of commodities, utility tokens, and securities. And of those, I see the least potential value, legitimate value of the utility tokens, just because, like, everybody uses gas, but that doesn't mean that, like, gasoline just skyrockets in value all the time. Like, it's, you know, it just ranges.
Another project among the list of stuff that had gotten added to Coinbase is Basic Attention Token, which is another ERC-20 token that I would say, like Augur, is, like, maybe the closest, among the closest to, like, actually sort of existing. Augur is a ultimately optimistic story, right? They sold a bunch of these tokens, and they actually at least, like, made the prediction market.
Yeah, there's a product. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think we should give them a little, like, clap, because
I'm
using the Brave browser.
Yeah, and you're using the Brave browser. So I had thought about, I don't remember who it was, some friend of ours was like, my investment hypothesis is only buying things you can actually use. So I looked at Basic Attention Token. I was like, okay, maybe I should buy this. Like, you can actually use it. I have some Augur. The reason I'd be buying it is because I think it's going to go up when it gets onto Coinbase, if it gets onto Coinbase. Augur has a market of, will Basic Attention Token get added to Coinbase? At a certain point, is it more efficient to just gamble on these outcomes than to actually, like, have to hold the Basic Attention Token bag the whole time you're waiting?
Well, that concept is pretty common in a lot of markets, where the derivatives market is more popular than the underlying. So, like, you know, the idea of paper gold versus, or, like, you know, you buy a gold ETF that's bigger than actual physical gold in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's basically speculating on gold more than you're dealing in real gold. So I think this could be very similar in what we see with crypto markets, is that the derivative is more popular than the underlying.
Do you think this could lead to a future where people aren't really, like, holding coins and private keys and that kind of thing, and are mostly just speculating on the future of them?
This all intertangles why, in general, like, I think the tokenized economy concept is a ways off and maybe really dumb.
We have to stop right there, because we're not gonna have a better final summation than that.
That's fair.
Aaron and I agree with you as crypto moderates, which is something that Aaron came up to describe us as.
Crinos?
What is that?
Crypto in name only?
Yes.
Do you know the term rhino?
I think maybe we could call ourselves government namers also.
I think Crino actually works because it's basically the right idea that we are saying that we are Bitcoiners and that we do a Bitcoin podcast, but we everything we say is what's wrong with
I also would accept Cryptmos.
Okay.
I don't want to get mistaken for a Crip.
Well,
these are just bear market things, man. We believe fully believe in crypto and Bitcoin when it's a bull market.
Yes.
Well, I generally believe in Bitcoin. I will say that Augur is interesting to me in the sense that, like, I do think that if there was fun ways in which you could do this with a very low cost, that it could actually be used in personal ways that actually I think are more interesting. So you could right now theoretically use Ethereum smart contract way as a way to sort of escrow money in a big bet, right? Like that's one of the examples. But that's, I don't know how to do that. Do you know how to do that? It seems very complicated. If there is a way that you could just privately do small markets for like a $1.60 fee or something like that, and you're betting someone $5,000 or
who's the verified trusted party in that though?
Oh yeah, that's true.
Well, Augur is just software.
Jay
right?
just scammed himself. Somehow.
I just scammed myself.
But Augur is just software. So when you're connecting to the mainnet, you're connecting to everybody else. Like that's where everybody goes to chat and to participate in the market together. I could easily imagine where someone is running Augur software, even tweaking it a little bit to have a platform like you're talking about where it's very one-to-one and you're using it essentially as a bet escrow service. So a private matching book rather than like an order book.
Yeah.
There was I can't find it again now, but there's some place you can get to an Augur. Doesn't speak well that I can't find it again now, where it says universes. And there's only one universe right now, which is the current Ethereum betting market that we're discussing. But it almost looks like the software is set up sort of the way like Warcraft, you know, you're on a specific server.
Like Battle.net West.
Yeah, that it seems like the service is architected so there can actually be multiple augers within Augur. That potentially there could be a private augur or a augur that you have to pay a membership fee to be a part of. It seems like they're prepared for a lot of different outcomes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it all strikes me as to what you said at the beginning, Brian, which is that it is compelling, interesting, and fascinating solutions to things that exist that have small but manageable problems, and that by introducing these solutions right now, not in the future perhaps, that you actually are introducing way more problems than the problem that you solved.
That's I definitely think that's a likely outcome, even if not the only potential one. So we've crapped on Augur a lot. It's worth at least saying, even though it took a long time, props to them amongst a world of unlaunched crypto products. They launched something.
They put their foot out there.
You know how like in the NFL, if you're like the 15th best quarterback in the world, you're like a piece of shit, you know? Like a middle of the NFL quarterback is getting like crapped on.
Yeah, but they're rich.
They're rich. Well, so are all of the people behind these cryptocurrencies. True. What I mean is like we criticize this because it's rudimentary, but this is the best crypto product I've ever seen. Like actually on the blockchain, actually interacting with the Ethereum network.
You think it's better than CryptoKitties?
Yes.
I don't think so.
Or I can imagine the places I can my brain can project it getting.
Yeah, it has more potential than crypto.
It's a much bigger
According to the co-founder of Augur, Joey Krug or Krug, however you say it, and he no longer is full-time Augur. Like he's now a venture capitalist, so I don't understand that. But according to him, it's the most complex Ethereum dApp that's ever been created. But of course, he's the creator of it. I don't hesitate to say they're probably trying to solve a lot of complex problems and whatnot, but I just, you know, we got to see more. We got to see it evolve. With that said, I did see some tweet where someone was like, I can't believe everybody's crapping on Augur because of a UI that's difficult or connecting is difficult. I'm at 20%, by the way, on card number 6. So they were like, despite that, here's the home pages of like, you know, Amazon and Twitter and all Google and all these things, like when they launched and how, you know, things evolve over time and you work out the easy stuff according to them, like the user interfaces and making it less quirky, but underlying is some great idea. And maybe Augur will be that. We will have to see.
I'm very bullish on the idea of Augur. I am less bullish on the, I mean, especially hearing what you just said about how the founder is now doing other things. Like, making this work is going to be an immense amount of time and effort. And it is the fundamental problem with ICO things, which is that if the people are already rich and they've made all the money they're ever going to make off this thing, what is the incentive to actually make it work? Which is something Aaron brings up a lot, which I tend to agree with. And this one seems to be plagued with the same problems. Like, for them to be able to make an entire economy of truth work, for lack of a better word, right?
Yeah.
That's going to take time to figure out, you know, and it's going to take smarter people that aren't just like engineers who are into crypto. And that takes a lot of investment. I just have a hard time believing that they're going to get over the finish line.
There's plenty. I feel like they're in the perfect place to get a lot of investment, though. They're like a gambling market for crypto.
Yeah, you can keep raising money. EOS raised, you know, their ICO ended up being worth $4 billion, and then they raised money on top of that. And I have no idea why.
But if you have like $600 million, you know, the most work you're going to do is to get from zero to $600 million. To get from $600 million to like $1.2 billion, you're not going to do as much work. I guess that's my
point. I ask a question? There's a fee built in for the maker of the market. It's 1% on most of these markets, less on some. Mm-hmm. Is the maker of the market Augur, or is the maker of the market the person who made that market, like the user who made that market? Do you guys know?
The person that added the market to the platform is
okay,
the one
that's what I thought.
Receiving that fee.
That's okay. So Jay, you guys planning our next show. I think the way we can get rich is to make some really good markets and
really good.
Some really awesome bets.
Yeah, they have to be super popular.
And then we got
to
pump these bets.
They have to be very crypto, Twitter, and crypto and Telegram friendly, though. Something that is spread virally through that ecosystem.
Yeah, I think we're the right three to do this. And this way we can profiteer on Augur without like getting too deep into
something
the
like,
hedging account.
Is Parabolic Trav a cuck?
But is that provable?
We'll workshop that.
huge action.
Jay, so far, Jay has only produced unsolvable questions or questions that scam himself.
So my friend Carpe Noctum wanted to get on this because he wanted to create the question, will Augur get hacked? And I think that's an interesting one because if it happens, can you win?
Months ago, when Augur was going to soft launch, that was the question they were going to launch with. Will Augur be hacked? And they were doing that, obviously, because they were trying to figure out, in true prediction market style, if a bunch of money came in at once on yes, then what that might mean.
Here's one that I think could work. I'm going to give you, this is a tease. We're going to end this episode with a tease for when we come back here. If there was a market right now for what will the next coins, not counting the five that have already been explored, but what will be the next coin added to Coinbase? This is the kind of thing I think we could start getting some snitches out there, some inside traders, start putting down a little money and maybe predict the future.
Oh, and actually that would be a lot of action as well,
right,
for our market feed. So Brian, we'll create this market because you can't connect and we'll just stake you into it. How about that?
I think Augur is a decent candidate for that. By the next time we talk about this, I fully expect Jay to be in like an Augur windsuit jacket and be like some Augur whale because he's just gone deep on it.
Oh, damn. I don't have it here. I was going to...
2 years of private school tuition leveraged into like random
I'm the Augur market maker.
It's not here right now, but next time I'm on, next time you get me on video, I'll wear my Ripple hat. I got a Ripple hat. Oh yeah. And it's
that podcast episode took you places.
Yeah, it's the new. It's not your granddaddy's Ripple. It's the new
logo.
This
is the X.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it says XRP on the back fold.
I was about to say they're going to be mad at you, man, because Ripple is very clearly not a security because it has. It's called XRP and it's got a different logo and it's not the same as the Ripple Corporation.
I'm sorry.
You should
my
remember
XRP
that.
Hat. My XR. I'll be wearing my XRP hat.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, great talking to you, Brian. Where can people find your stuff if they want to learn more about how your mind works?
Go to ledgerstatus.com and follow me on Twitter and thanks for having me, y'all. It was a lot of fun.
See you, Brian.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Thursday, July 19th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $7,420.
And that was Coin Talk. Thanks very much to Ledger Status for coming back in. You can actually watch, I believe, if you want to see what it looks like inside the crypto cave. He is cross-posting this episode to the Ledger Status, Ledger Cast YouTube page. Thanks very much to Tech Memes Ride Home Podcast. Check that out. Search for it in your podcast app. They are the first people to step up and sponsor this show. Will there be more? I certainly hope so, but huge thanks to them for jumping out ahead. If you also want to be an early sponsorship adopter, send me an email, hi@cointalk.show. Also, of course, thanks to Medium. You can find all of our episodes at medium.com/cointalk, including transcripts. And thanks to our editor, James Nicholson, for editing this week's episode. Again, hi@cointalk.show if you want to get in touch. We're offering some very juicy deals for those who decide to walk the sponsorship plank. So get in touch. We'll see you next week.